Welcome, Pewter Nation and Pewter Report readers, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I am Mark Cook, along with our publisher, Scott Reynolds. What? Where's Scott at?
He bailed on us this week.
What? Two weeks in a row.
Did you not notice when we set up all the equipment that Scott wasn't here?
Well, and here's the thing. We drove all the way down to Bradenton, Trevor, your neck of the woods.
We are
on Anna Maria Island. I can't think of a better office view than we have today here for this edition of the Pewter Nation podcast.
It's true. Scott picked the wrong day to skip.
Yeah.
He picked the wrong day. That's all I'll say.
But he wouldn't have driven this far. He would have up with some reason not to show
it's
up.
True.
But anyway, we want to real quick talk about our sponsor for this week's podcast. It is Papo's Taqueria. Our good friend Allie, the manager here, that's your job. She taught me how to say Trevor Taqueria. I had no idea how to say that, and I was always too embarrassed to ask somebody. So I always just said Papo's, the taco place.
Yeah, just go to Papo's, the taco place.
Yeah.
Yeah, the taco shop, you know.
Papo's has four locations in the Bradenton area. Trevor, you're a foodie. You love your good food.
It's true. If you like taking Instagram pictures of your food, which, let's all face it, the best kind of Instagram pictures.
Oh boy,
Papo's.
Have you never seen
Papo's
a bikini?
Papo's is prime for that. Well, I mean,
other than bikinis,
sure.
Food. Okay, all right.
Sure,
I'll give you that then. Yes, bikinis one, food number two.
It's a little more universal.
That's true. I give you that. But Allie is the manager here, and just talk real quick about your fresh ingredients and what you guys offer here.
Yeah, Papa's great concept here. All local ingredients, all organic. Our honey's raw from Sarasota. All the beef comes from Plant City or surrounding farms. It's all made holistically, which means they render the fat from each protein to cook with it. There's no added SMG or oil. All hormone and antibiotic free, really fresh tasting food. It's kind of a build your own assembly line. We press our tortillas to order. They're all organic, made from a local company. It really doesn't get much better than what we have going on here.
Super, super fresh food. Tremendous variety. Quesadillas. My favorite is the pork bowl. I know that I've got you hooked on that pork bowl as well, Trevor.
He does. Yeah.
And terrific tacos. Just wonderful food here at Papo's Taqueria here on Anna Maria Island. We're on Pine Street right now, but where are your other locations at?
Yeah, there's a location on the Manatee. It's near this corner of 75th and Manatee. We also have one on Lockwood Ridge and then University Parkway, sprinkled all everywhere.
Well, we appreciate the hospitality today.
And the Allie, great food, obviously.
The great time. Food, and we appreciate you guys sponsoring this edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having you guys.
All right, Trevor. Training camp. It can't get here soon enough. For Buccaneer fans, for people that have to do the job and the season starts, the grind really begins, and you're about to get a taste of what the grind is covering the Buccaneers.
I know, first training camp for me. Well, I kind of
No. Sitting in the stands, eating the free popsicles they pass out doesn't count as working a training camp.
You know what? All right, he's right.
Exactly. And Reynolds doesn't allow us to sit underneath the tent with the air conditioner, by the way. We have to be moving around and walking. That's the one thing you won't see from Pewter Report.
We also have
reporters.
To have a backpack full of weights, right? It's our training camp, too. Right?
Well, ankle weights. We're gonna give you ankle and wrist weights. Do they even do those anymore?
Are you
anymore?
Sure that's not like an ankle monitor?
That was big. Well, for me, it is. I can't leave Hillsborough County. Don't tell anybody I'm in Manatee County right now. My PO officer, he understands, or my probation officer. But
big fan of the pod.
Yeah, a huge fan of the pod. So he let me sneak out today. I got permission. It's coming. Buccaneer fans are amped up. I've been doing this full time since 2011. Now, I worked with Scott back in the mid 90s. That's how I got to know him, when it was Buccaneer Magazine. But it's a grind for the reporters. But I tell you what, Trevor, I have not seen an excitement level from the fan base like I've seen this year since 2011. It's certainly something unique, and it's easy to see and feel, whether it's social media, whether it's on our message boards, whether it's the comments to the stories. It's just a whole different ball of wax this year.
Yeah, it's I know people are always clamoring for football. Like, they always want this time of year to come around, but Bucs fans especially. I mean, we just, whatever it is we write, whether it's like my film reviews or just, you know, stories on what players are doing in the off season, kind of what they're doing with social media or fun little 4th of July, whatever it is. I mean, fans just comment on it. They're like, man, and it's not even like a negative. I can't wait for training camp. Like you said, like, it's an excited.
Sure.
Like, people are just, they're ready for it to get here because, like you said, the potential of this team is higher than any Bucs team that I can certainly remember, you know, because football didn't exist before 1999.
Right,
obviously.
Of course, yeah.
So,
I mean, by the way, that was evidenced by your fantasy draft.
Yeah.
There was no player that ever played before 1999. That's not true. I was impressed with your Charlie Hanna pick, but we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, had to solidify the line there. But
you know, you just Googled top Buccaneer players of all time. You have no idea who Charlie
100%
Hanna is.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, learned about him during the process. Right. So I guess it was good for me. I was kind of doing my homework at the same time. But yeah, just just going back to training camp, people are excited because there's all this what if. You know, there's what if every time around this time of year with the draft and free agency and all this stuff, but now for the first time, it's like, wow, we really get to see what could possibly become in this team. And a tweet came out, Pro Football Focus has been showing the Buccaneers a lot of love this offseason. Mm-hmm. With Chris Baker, you know, telling them what he brings, DeSean Jackson, obviously what he brings. So there have been tons of, you know, tweets and little
observations.
Yeah,
from
like
Pro
blurbs
Football
about
Focus. Sure.
What this offense could be, and they tweeted something else out today, and I kind of was like, on paper, this might be a top five offense in the NFL. Mm-hmm,
sure.
And especially for a franchise that's been kind of devoid of offense in general, it's
right.
kind of a big deal.
And the thing is, though, now the expectations are there. I mean, the Buccaneers have went out and signed players. They're moving Marpet to center. They got DeSean Jackson, drafted O.J. Howard. Cameron Brate emerged last year. Doug Martin's back after that three-game or will be back after his three-game suspension. Mike Evans, arguably top three receiver. I say number two right now in the entire NFL. I'll take him over Odell Beckham Jr., just underneath Julio Jones, but not by a whole lot right there.
Jameis would agree with you.
When Jameis becomes Matt Ryan, as far as the experience level and the number of starts under center that Matt Ryan has, mm-hmm. I expect Mike Evans to overtake Julio Jones at some point. And, you know, this offense – but here's the deal. The expectations are there. Are you a little nervous about can they live up to those expectations? And what's the pressure like on these players? What's the pressure like on Dirk Koetter and this entire offensive staff? Because unless there's a rash of injuries, there's no excuses why this isn't a top five offense this season.
Yeah, I was on a Falcons podcast earlier this week, and one of the questions they asked me is,
what was the score, 28-3 at one point? Did they ask you that?
I did not. I did
bring
not
that up?
Bring up the Super
Bowl
first.
Probably a good idea.
Somebody else did. Like within their little right. group, and I just said to him, I was like, "Hey, look, I didn't bring it up first. As long as you guys know that, I didn't bring it up first. I got a couple jabs in there after that." But
good.
Yeah,
good boy.
One of the questions was, he said, if there's all this potential, there's all this hype, there's all this excitement. If they don't live up to it, is it a disappointment or is it just they didn't miss the mark? And I said no, I kind of. It's got to be a
disappointment. It's a disappointment. Absolutely. There's no
and what's
question
the,
at all.
And what's the number? Is the number 10? I think
right.
the number's 10. Like, they got to get 10 wins.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
so,
they have to get 10 wins.
Because any less than that, it's not.
Now, the schedule is going to be tougher this year, but you know what? The Buccaneers are better this year, so they should be able to get that extra win.
Yeah,
I was in Vegas last weekend, and I was going to bet the over.
Humble brag, he was in Vegas.
Well, hanging out with my buddy Nick Carter. Of the Backstreet Boys.
Another humble brag.
Name drop. And but I went to one of the books at the MGM Grand. Reporters are allowed to gamble, right? I know players can't do that. I'm not going to get in trouble, am I?
I'm
Pete Rozelle going to call me?
I'm,
oh, wait,
I'm
he's not the commissioner
the fifth
anymore.
Here, even though
Roger
I gamble
Goodell.
A lot on fantasy football. So.
Well, so the line came out initially at 8 wins is the over and under for the Bucs this year. So I thought, man, I can't wait to get to Vegas and take the over on that. Well, guess what? I wasn't the only person. Because it's, I don't understand how it works, but it's like negative or minus 135
right.
or minus 1350 or something like that. Basically, you know, I would have had to bet a lot more money than, you know, it wasn't a great bet, in other words.
Right.
So I went ahead and just bet $10 on the Buccaneers winning it all. However, believe it or not, at one point that was around, you know, 50-1 odds. It's down to 25-1 odds right
for
now.
For them to win it all?
For them to win it all this year.
Wow.
So my $10 could
Vegas
turn into $250. So anyway, but they're trending up not only across the nation with the pundits
what are you
gonna
do with
and
the
things
money
like
if
that.
You win?
Well, I'll probably go ahead and secure my family's financial future with that $250 and retire.
For sure.
Yeah. We'll find a little cabin in the woods in West Virginia.
Complete the 401k right there.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm out. $250, I'm done. But anyway, so expectations, I agree with you. It would be a complete and utter disappointment if this team fails. Now, again, Jameis Winston goes down with an injury. Let me find some wood to knock on. The offensive line completely implodes with a number of season-ending injuries. Then that maybe it's not as much of a disappointment. But if this team stays relatively healthy on offense and the defense plays fairly well, or at least what we expect them to do You know, as far as their average goes last year, kind of poor in the first half of the season, but better in the bye week. Even if they're a middle of the pack defense, if the offense is as good as expected, this team should win 10 football games.
And that's the weird, like you said right there, you said, you used the word fail. And I agree with you, but like, can think, just thinking of where they have been in the past, to think that a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that wins 9 games or 8, even like goes 8-8, be considered a fail,
right,
is crazy.
Yeah.
It's pretty unique. The franchise is in a pretty unique situation, one that they haven't been in a long time. You can't not talk about Jason Light when you bring that up, because it is a contract year for him. And that's another thing that they talked about on the podcast. If they don't make the playoffs, so I'm at, like, let's just say they go 10-6 or whatever, don't make the playoffs, or even 9-7, don't make the playoffs. Jason Light get brought back? And I told him absolutely.
Not even, he's not going anywhere. Yeah. This team would have to go 0-16 and have 30 players suspended off the roster.
If they went 3-13, you think he'd get fired?
No, I don't think he'd get fired. I don't think he'd get fired. I mean, now if Deshaun Jackson were to have a meltdown week one and get suspended, and Chris Baker,
I mean, that would never happen,
tested positive for eating too many hot dogs and gained 400 pounds, some of his free agent signings turn out bad. Jameis Winston turns out to be a bad guy that everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people predicted that was going to happen. You know, something along, it would have to take a combination of
full
implosion. A full implosion for Jason Light to lose his job. So I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either.
The building blocks are there. If you look at Jason's drafts, there's some misses there. The Austin Seferian Jenkins and a handful of other ones. But
Iguaya will forever be associated with his name.
But for every Austin Seferian Jenkins, there's a Cameron Brate, an undrafted free agent guy.
Right.
And listen, those are feathers in the caps of GMs. No matter. I mean, they don't look. Productive players are productive players, however you get them, via the draft, free agency, whether they come from Mars, whatever you do to find these guys, if they contribute to your roster, it's a feather in your cap as a general manager and as a scouting staff. And with him being in charge of this scouting staff, those kind of things are feathers in his cap and things that are going to help drive his price up, I believe. He's
going to
be rewarded
with
a nice second contract from the Glazers.
Yeah, it's not whether he's coming back, it's just for how much, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
He's done plenty of job, and now it's really up to them. You know, it's up to the players, it's up to the coaches.
I think
Light's put them in a position to win, basically, to make the playoffs, to make that push, and that's his job. So,
well, I think we mentioned this on other podcasts. Your football team is better if you're the Buccaneers when you draft players that are coming off of ACL injuries, when you're, drafting guys that you're not counting on to start. I mean, listen, there's no way 3 or 4 years ago they take Kendall Beckwith, move up to take Kendall Beckwith.
Right.
They don't, because they can't afford that.
Right.
And
it might be the same thing with Justin Evans.
Sure.
Second round pick. They drafted this guy, and I think there's a chance they drafted him and went, hey, we could redshirt this guy basically for a whole year.
Yep.
That's a second round draft pick.
Yep.
That says a lot about where your football team is.
No,
you're right.
Absolutely. And let's switch gears real quick, Trevor.
Sure.
You wrote in your latest Cover 3 that came out on Thursday.
Yes.
It came out on Thursday. Your latest Cover 3 that came out on Thursday.
You mean my latest?
Yeah, your
the
latest.
The one that was published at the latest date.
Yeah, the last one that was actually came out on Thursday,
uh-huh.
Normally on Tuesdays.
Uh-huh.
I didn't say anything.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying anything. I'm not getting on you. It's here.
Says the guy who was in Vegas.
Oh, just because you had to cover the whole website for a weekend. Oh,
yeah,
boy.
It's Scott's. Yeah,
says the guy who went to a wedding for 19 days.
It was like 4.
And we didn't even know you were leaving. But anyway, we won't go into that either. Tremendous work on your Cover 3. What I like about you, Trevor, is you're not afraid to pick apart. You're not fluffing up these guys. You know what I mean? You're calling it like you see them. And you take a glance at Jameis Winston's college career, mm-hmm. and what he's done in the NFL so far. And you pointed out some things that he's got to do better. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Because as reporters, it's not our job to be cheerleaders. It's certainly not our job to beat a player down and constantly point out their mistakes. It's just to report the facts. And I thought you made a good argument about some of the things that Jameis Winston needs to work on heading into year 3.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. There's a reason why people argued Mariota over Winston for the number one overall pick. And it's because he had 25 touchdowns and 18 interceptions in college, let alone the fact that he's been 5th in the NFL and 2nd in the NFL in interceptions in his first 2 years. Granted, obviously, I say in the article, he's done plenty of good things. I'm not trying to completely bash him. He's also a young kid. But you at some point, you've got to stop turning the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of went in, this is a suggestion by one of the readers who was reading a previous Cover 3 who wanted to talk about this and James's pre-snap reads and what he's seeing and why he's having these turnovers. Is it completely accuracy issues? Well, no. Sometimes it's just that, and I explained in this article, man, we love James's attitude of him never giving up, him believing that his guys can
always 1,000% faith in his arm and his players can beat the guys on the other side of the ball.
And that is an awesome thing to have. It's a rare thing to have, but it also gets him in trouble because there are times, and you see it in college, I pointed out in a couple plays, and you even see it early on when he was in the pros.
Right.
He will hike the ball. He'll know where his hot read is. He'll stare it down.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll fire it right at him, whether they're open or not. And you just, you can't do that in the NFL.
You can't get away with that. You're right.
And I think that growing up, I make this point too. Jameis, I think for the most part, has been the best football player on the field whenever he's been on the field, up until the NFL, where the competition really levels out. And so for the first time, I think we're seeing Jameis really have to respect defenses, whereas before, I don't think he has. His arm was too good. He was too good of an athlete. You know, he put too much trust in his guy, all this stuff. Like, he got wins in college football, but he also turned the ball over a lot. And it didn't really start to hurt him till, guess what, right now, the NFL. And so this is the third year. It's something he's got to recognize. And it's something that I point out, too, near the end of the article. He started to take steps towards last year in 2016. So he started to kind of remedy that. I point out a couple of ways that he can help get better and where he is kind of on his timeline. But
And Jameis recognizes that, and so does Dirk Koetter. I mean, it's been something that, you know, Jameis has said it in those losses and those post-game press conferences last year. What went wrong, Jameis? I turned the ball over. I lost the game. Doesn't matter what happened with the defense or, you know, if Martin fumbled or, you know, whatever happened. Jameis took the blame on his shoulder, and I think that's something that he's working on trying to rectify this offseason. I think he's tried all along, but as you say, what you love about Jameis Winston is also what scares you to death if you're a head coach for Jameis Winston at times, because there's not a throw on the field that he doesn't think he can make. Now, I will give Jameis credit. Rarely does he make the same mistake in the same game. The very first game against the Tennessee Titans, he throws a pick six.
Yeah.
Didn't have a pick six all of college. We haven't seen that same pick six on that exact same play. Later, a couple games later, they're playing the Panthers here. Who's the kid, the crazy loud talker guy that
Josh Norman?
Yeah, Josh Norman took one. And the guy, you know, he completely bluffed Jameis into making that throw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Jameis has made that same poor throw. He does learn from his mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still always going to test the limits. And that's one thing that Buccaneer fans in particular, and myself and Scott, pointed out about Mike Glennon. As much as we like Mike Glennon, he was not a risk taker.
Yes.
He was going to play it safe.
Yeah.
And you can win football games with a safe quarterback.
Can't
I don't know how many
games.
Super Bowls you win with a safe quarterback.
I mean, we saw that with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
They have Alex Smith, and Alex Smith is great. Alex Smith is one of the best game managers in the NFL.
Sure.
And they just moved up a ton of spots to draft a rookie that might be not that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And so, you know, and that's not even to talk about all the other traits that Jameis has, the way that he inspires his teammates, all of those things. You know, the intangibles.
Yeah.
And those are the things, listen, let's be honest, those are the intangibles are what got Jameis drafted by Jason Light.
Yes.
Jason Light loved
yes.
the competitive
Agreed.
Spirit, the intangibles that Jameis possesses. But I thought it was a really good look at the good, the bad, and the ugly, and there is some ugly. And Jameis will be the first to tell you that, and Jason Light and Dirk Koetter will tell you the same thing.
There's definitely, you know, when we talk about learning curves, no matter what it is, how old you are in the NFL, you, especially as a quarterback, you eventually have to get to a point where you're not learning from your mistakes. You're seeing your mistakes before you make
sure.
them, so you don't make them.
Right.
And that's kind of where we need to see Jameis be in years 3, 4, 5 of his career if he's going to get to that potential. He's got to see his mistakes before he even makes them.
And I don't think his mistakes come from, well, we know that it doesn't come from a lack of film study because Jameis is the first one in the building every single morning. He beats Dirk Koetter to the facility. So he's watching tape.
Sure.
He's doing all of those things to make himself better. He understands defensive concepts. I mean, here's a guy that in 6th or 7th grade was diagramming Cover 2 defenses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy understands him. But again, sometimes the greed, I think that might be the right word, right? He gets a little greedy.
A little bit.
Attempting
Certainly
to make some
college,
of those
yeah.
throws. And I should point out, however, even his worst game in college where he threw 4 first half interceptions, he still was able to beat the Gators 24-19.
Jeez.
Just want to point that out. Who was y'all's quarterback at the time?
That was Treon Harris.
Yeah. Who was a Seminole recruit who flipped right before signing day.
Yeah.
And Dalvin Cook was a Gator recruit that also flipped. So just imagine if the roles would have been reversed.
Short end of the stick there in Gainesville.
Yeah, I'd say that you guys lost out just a little bit on that flip.
Not great. We did flip. We did flip Fowler from you guys at the very last second. So at least I can hang my hat on that. But wish Treon Harris would have gone to Florida State. I'll just say that.
I don't think he would have lasted very long as a quarterback there. I think Jimbo would have recognized him for what he was, an athlete, but not necessarily the best guy under center. But this is a Buccaneer podcast, so we'll get off of the but we always got to take a few jabs at each other as far as the Gators and Seminoles go. A few jabs we took at each other. We did a all-time fantasy draft, all-time Buccaneer fantasy draft, you, Scott, and I. And look, I mean, it's pretty clear cut that I won, and we haven't even revealed the last set of picks.
Get out of here.
You know, and I started with Jameis Winston, and I took some abuse for that. But I think if people sit back and think about it and what we talked about, and you mentioned it earlier, you got to have a quarterback to win football games in the NFL.
True.
You don't need game managers, and Jameis Winston is the right guy. I don't know if there's a quarterback I take if I'm starting a franchise from scratch right now of all the quarterbacks in the league. You know, over Jameis Winston. I'm sure if I thought and looked at all 32, there may be a couple that maybe I would take over him.
He's in the conversation.
But certainly, as far as the young quarterbacks go, I certainly would take him over most anybody. You know, you went with – who did you go with your first round pick?
I had Warren Sapp was my first. And then – so my first five rounds were Warren Sapp, Simeon Rice, Gerald McCoy, Doug Williams, Michael Bennett.
Great. So you guys are going to try and win games 3-0 because you have no offense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, but.
Yeah, kind of. Who was your quarterback?
Doug Williams.
Oh, yeah, Doug Williams. What round did you draft him?
Fourth.
You realize he was a 47% completion percentage guy in the NFL, right?
You know, good thing I got Keyshawn Johnson and Vincent Jackson. Just chuck it up.
Well, I took Doug's favorite receiver, tight end Jimmy Giles. So, I mean, I crushed the offense right out of the gate.
Yeah, I did want Giles.
Yeah, Giles was the man.
And I you know who I drafted as my tight end?
O.J. Howard.
Let's
take a guy who hasn't caught a ball in the NFL yet. Good move. I'm sorry, Cameron Brate was there. Hello. Hell, Ron Hall, Jackie Harris,
you know,
Dave Moore were there. I might have taken over.
I'm hoping we look back on this bad boy and I got the steal of the century with O.J. Howard.
You
That's
might
all I'm
have.
For.
You might have, but as of right now, career stats, 0 catches for 0 yards.
I know Scott probably thinks he had the best team, and he's probably just sitting in Orlando listening to this podcast, you know, all pompous. And
no doubt. He has a mini throne built wherever he goes so he can sit on it because, you know, he is the head honcho of Pewter Report.
Of course.
According to Twitter.
It comes with the title. You get your throne that goes everywhere with you.
Well,
you
know? I will say he's a 24-year survivor in the media covering one team. I mean, the guy's never had another job.
That's pretty impressive.
So I can't knock you too bad for that. Now, too bad for that. Now, I debated between Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp is my all-time favorite Buccaneer player. Warren Sapp, to me, is the best Buccaneer ever. Scott will argue it's Derek Brooks. And then some people throw Leroy Selman into that equation.
O.J. Howard.
Would you? Yeah. Well, it's between Warren Sapp or Mark Cotney, former safety.
Sure.
That was actually an expansion draft player from the Houston Oilers in 1976. And I'm actually reading a book right now on the 0-26 Buccaneers, which I'm going to give you when I finish so you can learn a little bit of history of how this team started, which is actually a very good book. Talks about the whole expansion process and how it was awarded to the McCloskey family initially, but he couldn't come up with the money. So Hugh Culverhouse, who was a tax attorney in Jacksonville, swooped down and took the team. And anyway, great history of this franchise, something in all seriousness that I think you would find kind of interesting to learn about. But I'd forgot that Mark Cotney was part of that expansion draft in 1976 that the Seattle Seahawks and the Buccaneers were a part of. Crazy thing was, back then, I think the rosters were 50 players, maybe 48, and teams could protect 43. So there was like 6 players from each team that the Buccaneers and the Seahawks could take. Needless to say, it's very easy to see why the Buccaneers started off 0-26.
That's awful.
Yeah, yeah, it was awful. It was very bad. Buccaneers and Ron Wolf was the general manager.
43?
Yeah.
How did that make any sense?
Yeah, I don't know. It was all in the book. And I learned a lot.
Here's a Lightning fan going through this NHL expansion draft that happened, and I'm like, they're going to take all our players.
Right.
What are we doing?
Right. Well, back then they didn't take it. They were cast offs. They were injured guys. They were malcontents. Those were the guys that were made available. Guys even on injured reserve. They could put injured reserve guys on. And here's the deal. Once one guy was drafted, you could take another guy off the list. So if you had five available, one got drafted.
What?
Then you took another one off. There was only three from that team that was still available. So they got the bottom of the barrel. No wonder that this team started 0-26. But going back to our fantasy draft, you know, I thought, you know, I thought about Warren Sapp, ended up going with Jameis Winston. You went with Sapp, and Scott went with Derek Brooks.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to continue this series. We certainly would love people to comment on it, talk about what they like, what they agree with. And next Monday, the poll question, sponsored by Ford's Garage, is going to be who won the fantasy draft.
I think on Saturday we're going to publish a little recap, each of us kind of talking about our team as a whole. And then we're also going to talk about our team as if we played each other, I think. So talk about some strengths and weaknesses there. You talk about how you guys literally aren't going to get a single yard because I'm just going to sack the quarterback every single play.
Apparently you didn't see my offensive line, which consisted of Ali Marpet and J.R. Sweezy. No, I didn't have Ali, actually. I think Scott had Ali. Yeah, I picked Holly at center. I may have made a slight mistake there because there were some other guys available. Yeah. Although, as I wrote in the Thursday recap of rounds, I think 11 through 16 or whatever it was, in all honesty, is there anybody that you want on this football team to have your back if you're in a bar fight in South Tampa at 11:30 at night more than Joe Holly? Seriously.
Maybe Evan Smith. Maybe.
I'll take Holly. I think Smith just all about the tattoos.
When we were at that poker tournament, they were both at our table at one point. I don't remember if you were still in it.
No, I got knocked out.
Okay, I think it was me and Kyle who were still at that table, and both of those dudes were just sitting next to us, and it's like, man, y'all are big people.
Yeah, yeah, they're big people. Man, they got mean streaks. That's why I'm saying. I love Joe.
Yeah, they're great dudes, though. Yeah. That was fun.
But anyway, people can go to pewterreport.com. They can look at all of the draft. We've got another day. Friday is the last day, right?
Yep. Yep, and we get a lot of special teams people and some...
Scott took a special teams guy on day four. What the heck is he thinking, Carl the Truth Williams?
He's a JCN. He's a, you know...
Yeah, that was a little weird.
He's
I mean, that's got to be your last guy, or at least
really
in the last day
of picks. I think my last pick was a punter.
Exactly. That's what it should be. I think mine was a place kicker or something. I don't know. But anyway, you'll have to wait until Friday, probably the day that this podcast will be up, you'll be listening to it. Go to pewterreport.com and check out all of our coverage of our fantasy draft. Let's see. We've got a few more minutes. We're going to do an abbreviated podcast here, not quite as long as we normally do. Number one, Scott's not here. So, you know, with Scott not here, we don't really have as much to talk about because Scott can, like, just talk for, like, 15-minute segments all by himself, and we don't get a word in edgewise.
I know. I don't have those kind of Raheem Morris stories.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
I wish I did.
All right, go ahead.
I have a story about Leroy Selman.
You have a story about Leroy Selman?
I do.
About when he started the restaurant franchise?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you want me to tell it?
Might as well.
Okay, so when I was like a real little kid, right when I was just born, probably less than a year old.
So this was like 12 years ago?
Yeah. I was flying... or my mother was flying with me back to Michigan, which is where she was from, to go visit her family. My dad had to stay at work down here, couldn't go up. So it was just my mom there, and she's flying back from Michigan, right? And she sits down next to the plane, or she sits down on her seat on the plane, and I just start wailing, crying. Like, I'm not about it. The second we take off, I'm just, you know.
Did you get the news that Steve Spurrier was retiring? What was it that caused you to cry? Was that when Urban Meyer retired for the first or the seventh time?
I probably had a prophetic dream about Jimbo Fisher's smile just staring at me, and that's probably what made me cry.
All right.
And so there was the man that she was sitting next to was like doing instead of like complaining about it, whatever, he was just doing little things to, you know, just try and spook me, make me stop crying, you know, just like little like peekaboo things, whatever. My mom ended up having to get up and like put a bag up top.
In actuality, this guy had a taser gun and was tasering you under the sheets.
Perhaps.
Your mom didn't know that. That's why you were crying.
My mom even like handed me to him when she had to like get something from the seat and put it up in it. And then like.
I bet you had the cutest little man bun too. Did you clip it or rubber band it back then?
It was before my time.
Okay.
That was probably when I was in my prime back then. So, like, I guess when she handed it to him, like, I had stopped crying. He got me to fall asleep, all this kinds of stuff. So, anyways, get off the plane.
And he's now your stepfather.
I get off the plane.
Uh-huh.
not me personally. My mother carries me in her arms off the plane.
Right.
My dad's like, hey, how was the flight? Like, how was Trevor? How was all that? And she's like, well, he was screaming a bunch at the beginning. And then this man that was sitting next to us was so helpful. He was just, like, trying to play with him, make him laugh. I even, like, made him fall asleep, blah, blah, blah. And she points at it. She's like, oh, it was him right there. And my dad's like, that guy right there. And my mom's like, yes. My mom knows nothing about Stuart. And I think my dad said he asked like three times, like, that guy, that, right. Sure, that guy. And she's like, yes. And he's like, Pam, that's Leroy Selman.
Leroy Selman coddled man bun, ladies and gentlemen, and rocked him to sleep. Can anybody else in the Pewter Nation audience
that, but I thought of that this that. Week when, wow. When I was doing the recap.
That's better than any Reynolds story. This one is even better than the Chuck Berry story.
The best of the best last week. I was thinking, I was like, man, I don't have any Buck stories. And then I was like, oh, I have that one. I have that. So, yes, Leroy Selman apparently held me in his arm at one point. Yeah, basically rocked me.
And he may have just scared you into falling asleep.
Perhaps.
He was a big man.
Perhaps, yeah.
Well, all right, we're talking about man.
That's my Buck story.
We're talking about man buns. Now, that brings us to our first question on the message boards. Actually, this one came from Twitter.
Okay.
If the Buccaneers win 12 games this year, will Tampa Bay Trey, man bun himself, shave his head and donate his hair to Locks of Love? Will you do it for 12 wins? Yes or no, Trevor? Come on. Make a commitment right here, right now.
If they win 12 games?
12 games.
Like total, like playoffs included, or it's got to be regular season?
I think it doesn't specify. We're going to just call it 12 total.
Oh, man. That's a long time I've been growing my hair.
That's a lot of wins.
That's a lot of wins.
How long have you grown this?
It's been almost a year.
That's not that long. Yes, he will do it. There you go. There's the answer to that. I thought you were going to say like 9 years. All right, let's see what else we got here on the questions. With the quarterback comparisons Scott Reynolds mentioned with Jameis, would a closer comparison be Steve McNair, a big arm and had that willingness to win? I think that's a pretty neat comparison. Now, really kind of different quarterbacks. I think Jameis is a little more advanced initially coming out of college as far as reading of defenses and things like that. Probably a little bit more of a leader. McNair, probably more accurate maybe. I don't remember Steve McNair in his first 2 years per se. I'd have to look that up. But I don't think that's a terrible comparison. Certainly a better comparison to the Jamarcus Russell comparison he was getting before the draft.
Oh, yeah. That's just...
goes without saying.
African-American quarterback goes number one in the draft. Oh, he's Jamarcus Russell.
Right.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well...
and as far as we know, Jameis does not drink codeine syrup or whatever he Jamarcus was doing. And eating a lot of hot dogs.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, so that's the answer to that. I don't think that's a bad comparison. That's not.
I don't hate that.
Out of the realm.
But then again, I didn't watch a ton of Steve McNair.
Well, he was before your time again.
Correct.
You weren't born yet.
At that point, I was, in Leroy Selman's arms.
All righty. And the last question we have in Leroy Selman's arms. In a 3-4 set, what's your best front seven you can put out there? Let me hear what you come up with.
In a 3-4?
If they do
so
some 3-4
this year.
So if the
Bucs
were to
do a 3-4, it would be Chris Baker at the nose, Gerald McCoy at the defensive end, Will Golston at the defensive end, Noah Spence as pass rush linebacker. I'm going to say Jaquy Smith is the other outside linebacker, and then Quan and David.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was kind of thinking. Now, those defensive ends, you can kind of rotate with some different guys. Mm-hmm. But
like,
I think,
Ayers could play that. McDonald could play that.
But you need your best pass rushers on the field. Now, here's the deal. I don't think Gerald McCoy is nearly effective playing technically a defensive end spot just because he doesn't have that great redirect. He's got great get-off, but you need a guy that can turn a corner, stop on a dime, and cut back inside like a Simeon Rice-type player.
Right.
I don't think that would be the best position for him.
That's
However,
why I think Golson's the other starter on the other end.
And I think I see what you're saying there. It could be Robert Ayers would get some time
could
at
be.
The defensive
yeah.
end, too. But that's probably not a bad front
that
seven.
Would be,
as far
that
as
would
that
be
goes.
That would be the 3-4 I would go with if they were going to go with a 3-4.
All right. Well, we are doing an abbreviated version live from Papo's on Anna Maria Island next week. Hopefully, the trio will be back together again.
Get
Trevor,
the band back together first time in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be weird having Reynolds back. But you know what we're going to do? We're just not going to show up.
Just bail.
Yeah, just let Reynolds roll solo.
He could do it. He could easily talk a straight hour without taking a breath. He's
pretty
good at that.
He'll probably go 2 hours.
He might go three.
Wow.
Yeah, he just, when he gets on a roll, he doesn't stop. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast because we've been kind of jabbing at him the whole time. Anyway, Trevor, appreciate it. We thank our wonderful Pewter Report sponsors. Our bowling league's going well. We've got another charity bowling event. We'll have a story up on that on Monday. Trying to find a player. Tough to find current players right now because most of them are in Jamaica or the Bahamas or somewhere like that. But we'll have a former player or somebody out for our next charity bowling event, which will be mid-July at Pin Chasers in Tampa. Make sure to go check them out. Let them know Pewter Report sent you. Certainly check out all of our other sponsors on pewterreport.com. And we will be back at some point next week, hopefully with all three of us again, for another Pewter Nation podcast. I'm Mark Cook for Trevor Sikkema and the absent, disappearing ghost Scott Reynolds saying, until next week, we'll catch you later.